You guys, how's it going? Welcome to D4, D&D Deep Dive. This is the show where each week we take a deep dive into one, sometimes two, specific character builds for Dungeons & Dragons. We crunch numbers about them, we theorycraft about them, in the attempt not to tell you the right way or the best way to play a character, but to explore one potential way of creating a particular character with the hopes of making something that is both really fun and also really powerful to play in D&D. So if you enjoy creating characters for Dungeons & Dragons almost as much as you enjoy playing the game itself, or if you're just looking for tips or ideas on a particular character that you would like to play, then welcome home. This is where you belong. I'm so happy that you're here, so thanks for being here. My name's Colby, and I am super excited about the episode today because the character is very different than anything that I've done before, and that's always fun. All right, let's just jump right in. So often, when we think about what it means to play a support-focused character, most of us, I think, tend to think, oh, you mean a healer. But the great thing about playing support is that there are so many ways that you can do it, right? I think, defined most loosely, support is essentially doing something to increase your ally's chance of success. That can certainly come in the form of healing, but it can also come in the form of making your enemies weaker, or debuffing, as we say, or making your ally stronger, or buffing. But making your ally stronger doesn't just have to be like buffing them via spells like Bless, right? It can also be doing things to let them do more or extra stuff that they would otherwise be unable to do. Move more, make more attacks, etc. Now, judging by the number of requests that I get for the concept, a lot of you are interested in playing a support character who focuses more on those kinds of things. Healing? Sure, maybe as a backup or sort of triage option, but you want to play a character who is the ultimate leader, like Sun Tzu for D&D, directing your allies, inspiring them, enabling them through your charismatic leadership and mastery of the battlefield to do more than they would otherwise be able to do, to exploit the enemy's weaknesses and turn those into your own party's success. My friend Corey, who's the DM for us over on our Tales of Anaria actual play, played a character like this in a campaign that we dubbed the Bronze Battalion. His character, who we called Sarge, was the leader of our little, like, mercenary band, but he didn't actually do a lot of damage himself. Instead, he made everyone else in our little, like, platoon a whole lot more effective at what they were doing. I know that Corey really loved this character, and as someone who greatly benefited from having a character like that in combat with me, I can attest that we all really loved having him leading and directing the battle. So that's the type of character that we're going to build today. I'm not going to worry too much about damage or even survivability or control. This is a support character, but one who supports, again, not so much via healing, though they will be able to provide a little bit of that sort of combat medic-esque healing when needed, but through leadership. And since I've never really come up with a great way to quantify the efficacy of a support build, especially since we're not even really focused on healing here, so like healing per round or whatever that I've done for a couple of builds in the past doesn't really work, I'm just not even going to worry about the graphs and the spreadsheets for this one. We're just going to have fun, try to find a way to compile as many of the best master tactician-like characteristics that I can. You are the strategist, the master planner, the one with a vision. You are episode 93, the Battlefield Commander. Big thanks to my friend Randall Hampton for the fabulous artwork that he came up with this character concept, just like he does every week for every character concept that I send him. He's an amazing talent, and you should absolutely be following him on Twitter or Instagram or Twitch. And so if you want to do any of those things, you should check the video description on how to do so. Reach out to him to potentially see if you might be able to commission him for a piece of your own or for your party. I know that he gets really busy. Commissions are sometimes closed. Be patient. I'm sure that he would love to do some work for you once he gets time. Not to speak for you. Sorry, Randall. Anyway, Randall, you're awesome. Thank you. Also, really quick, before we jump in, I wanted to give a little sneak peek of what's to come for this character by reading the description that the team over at Describe came up with for this concept as well, as they are the sponsor for the video this week. The warrior barks commands at her allies as they regroup, preparing for the next assault. Sweat glistens on her ruddy orange skin as she assesses the situation, her brilliant mind extrapolating all potential outcomes with incredible speed. She pictures the scene, viewing combatants from above like pieces on a board, and a smile creeps across her fanged maw. Climbing atop the barricade, she weaves arcane gestures in the smoke-filled air, her movements lithe yet precise. Glittering magenta energy settles over her allies, imbuing them with supernatural speed and skill. Satisfied, she draws her longbow, knocks an arrow, and waits for the enemy to spring her trap. Oh, those guys kill it every time. So evocative. For those who don't know, Describe is a fantastic tool that players and DMs alike can use to get professionally written descriptions of almost anything you can imagine wanting a description for in a D&D game. Settings, characters, attacks, dialogue, spells, magic items, etc. And if it hasn't already been written, you can request that they create something for you, with a hero subscription, at least. But even with a free account that's available to anybody, you can get access to thousands and thousands of searchable descriptions in their massive library that's growing every day. Today, I wanted to highlight something that's been added relatively recently that you might not know about, the verse section of the Describe library. Who doesn't love a good tavern song? I know I do. But sometimes, as a bard trying to perform one in a tavern, or as a DM trying to come up with something on the fly, you might roll a one on your in-real-life performance check. Enter the Describe Verse tag, which will help you find some really fantastic rhymes, songs, and shanties. To see what's available, all you have to do is navigate to Search from the drop-down on the homepage, then find the Verse option under Scene Tags, and voila, all the lyrics that your heart could desire, with more being added all the time, of course. Like, for example, the tavern song Redemption of Fire, or the sea shanty Dragon's Coming, which is to be sung to the tune of Drunken Sailor, very conveniently, so we can all sing along. Or the more haunting and slightly creepy Rime of the Silent Phantom. These verses are just one more of the amazing arrows that Describe has in their constantly growing quiver of things that will help you take the immersion of your game to the next level for everyone at your table. So if you haven't already, be sure to sign up for a free account over at Describe. Use this URL, if you wouldn't mind, describe.com/d4, so that they know you heard about them from me. And if you like what's available for free, just wait until you see what you can get with a subscription. And if you decide to sign up for a subscription, be sure to use the promo code D4 at checkout to save 10%. So big thanks to Describe, as always. You guys are awesome. And let's jump into the build. All right, at level 1, I should mention that with this character, we're going to be doing a lot of multiclassing and bouncing around a bit. And for that reason, I would probably treat this character like I've done with a few others in the past and say we should maybe consider this character to be their own custom class. Instead of like a rogue, which is what we're going to start as, mixed with two or three other classes, I'd probably talk to my DM right at the beginning and say, I want to consider this character as being, well, the Battlefield Commander class. They were trained at the finest military academy in the land and have just graduated, so they can put their theoretical knowledge and training to the test and develop them into practical, tactical skills. There are a few compelling reasons to start rogue, I think, but one of the biggest is that starting rogue gives us more skill proficiencies, 4, than any other class. And as a battlefield commander with extensive training and education, it felt right to me that we would be a little bit of an expert in a lot of different areas of study, right? And no, like most of the classes that we're going to be taking, I don't really think of this character as a rogue in like the traditional sense. They're not a spy or a thief or an assassin. They are more like Murdoch from the A-Team. He was the leader of the A-Team, right? Sure, he could perform a little counterintelligence, but mostly he was like a strategist, the idea guy, a planner, a charismatic leader with a sharp wit and a twinkle in his eye. That's what kind of rogue we are. As for our race, I'm gonna recommend that we go with the new Hobgoblin from Mom, Monsters of the Multiverse. And yes, this is another example of a race that I've really been wanting to try building a character around ever since the changes to some of the races were leaked from Monsters of the Multiverse months ago. So I'm really excited to finally get the chance to do so here. Thanks again, Mom! I have never done a Hobgoblin before, and I really like the change that they got with the new book. For those who don't know, there were a number of changes to the Hobgoblin for Mom, but the biggest one, I think, and the one that I really wanted for this character was the new Fae Gift feature. With Fae Gift, we're told that proficiency bonus times per day, we can take the help action as a bonus action. That's not bad. Better yet, when we do this, we can gain some additional benefits on top of simply helping our ally to perform better. And we choose those benefits from a nice little list. The hospitality option gives us and the companion that we're helping temporary hit points equal to 1d6 plus our proficiency bonus. Not bad. The passage option gives us and our ally 10 feet of move speed until our next turn. And the spite option says that until our next turn, the first time the ally that we are helping hits an enemy with an attack, that enemy has disadvantage on the next attack it makes within the next minute. All really great and useful options, and each will come in handy as you try to bolster, move, or protect your party. So right out the gate, we have a nice little tactician support-like feature. Also with Hobgoblins, what was previously called Saving Face has been reworked and renamed into Fortune of the Many. This tells us that whenever we fail an attack, an ability check, or a saving throw, we can, once per short rest, gain a bonus equal to the number of allies you see within 30 feet of you to that roll, potentially causing it to succeed. The bonus is capped at 3 now instead of the previous 5, which is kind of a bummer. But I love the idea of the leader both inspiring their allies and being inspired by them in return. You have to be an example to those you're leading, right? Can't let them see you fail, or they might lose heart. As for our ability scores, I assume point by, as always, and recommend starting with a 14 dexterity, a 13 constitution and taking our +1 from our racial there, a 14 wisdom, and a 14 charisma taking our +2 from our racial bonus there. Wait, a rogue with a 14 dex and a 16 charisma. I know. It seems a bit odd. It will make more sense later, I think, but honestly, it won't be until quite a bit later. The truth is, I'm just not going to be all that concerned about damage with this character. I'm trying to build the best leader that I can, and a good leader should be well-rounded, yes, but should be charismatic above all, I think. Feel free to take that +2 bonus in dexterity instead if you'd prefer, especially if you're not going to be playing this character much past level 8 or so. As for our equipment, I would recommend gold buy option as I usually do and say let's take a short bow and some studded leather armor and then whatever other necessities you may have. My preference would be to play this character as a ranged character, I think. Again, they are a true tactician, not necessarily a frontliner, right? And as such would be better suited, in my opinion, being able to survey the battlefield from a bit of a distance, directing their comrades where to go, who to strike, how to maneuver, etc. And we're never going to be particularly tanky either, so being able to stay at range and a little more out of harm's way will be ideal. As a rogue, then, at level 1, we get expertise, first of all. Another great reason to start rogue. Expertise lets us pick 2 skills that we're proficient in and double our proficiency bonus with them. Or 1 skill and your proficiency with thieves' tools. Now, I'm not really planning on being the party's, scout, lockpicker, trap disarmer with this character, honestly. But you definitely could fill that role if you wanted, especially if you started with a higher dexterity. So feel free to take expertise in stealth and thieves' tools. I think for me, I'd probably go with, persuasion and intimidation, or maybe perception. But that's mostly going to be for roleplay purposes. Rogues also, at level 1, of course, get sneak attack. And even though we're not building for damage necessarily, one benefit of going rogue is that they get some nice bonus damage from sneak attack that will help us feel like we're contributing a little bit more to the eliminating of our enemies outside of just by making our allies better and faster and more effective. As a reminder, with sneak attack, so long as you're making an attack with a finesse or ranged weapon and you have advantage or your target is within 5 feet of an ally, you can add sneak attack bonus damage once per turn to a weapon attack, and currently that is a 1d6. Rogues also at level 1 get Thieves' Cant, which is their special coded language that they can use to communicate with others who can decipher it. At level 2, we get cunning action, and this is another nice thing about rogues for someone who isn't super tanky and won't necessarily have a weaponized bonus action. Cunning action lets us take the dash, disengage, or hide action as a bonus action, right? Which will really help us be more mobile and also get away from those pesky enemies who do happen to get up in our business, despite the fact that we're trying to stay at ranged.
Shore up those ranks! The enemies have penetrated our defenses!
At level 3, we get our roguish archetype, our subclass. And this is the main reason, above all, that I wanted to start with rogue on this character, because we are going to take... Do you know? Any guesses? You already know, don't you? That's right. We're going mastermind. So many people ask me to do builds for subclasses that are generally thought of as pretty weak or suboptimal. And mastermind rogues tend to be pretty high on that list, I think. So yeah, I've never used this subclass until today, and I'm super excited to do so because I think it's a perfect fit for this character, and especially when coupled with the new Hobgoblin. So yeah, again, our rogue is not a thief or an assassin. They are a master planner. They see all the angles. They know how to both inspire their allies and exploit enemy weaknesses. So as a mastermind, we get two features. The first is a little more for utility, the Master of Intrigue, which tells us that we learn two more languages, nice, and gain proficiency with the disguise kit, the forgery kit, and a gaming set of our choice. We can also unerringly mimic the speech and accent of a creature we hear speak for 1 minute, passing us off as a native so long as we can speak the language. I hope you get to use this feature at some point in your campaign, because it would be really cool. More importantly for us, however, is the Master of Tactics feature that we also get here, which tells us that we can use the help action as a bonus action. Now, sure, as a hobgoblin, we could already do this PBXPD. But very importantly, I think we're told that when we take the help action, whether to help an ally on their next ability check, or more likely for us now, to grant assistance to an ally on attack that they make against an enemy, we can do so from 30 feet away. And that is a really, really nice benefit for a hobgoblin who is all about helping their allies perform at their best level. As I'm sure most of you know, typically, when we take the help action, we have to be within 5 feet of whoever we're taking the help action for, whether an ally to give them advantage on their next ability check, or to help an ally against an enemy, granting them advantage, right? We're distracting the enemy or whatever. We have to be within 5 feet of that enemy. So as cool as the Fey Gift Hobgoblin feature is by itself, without being a mastermind rogue, it just felt to me anyway like it would be fairly lackluster unless we built a melee-focused character, right? But being in melee just didn't make a lot of sense for me for the archetype that we're going for here. Now, we can take the help action as a bonus action anytime we want, not just proficiency bonus times per day. But proficiency bonus times per day, we can add temporary hit points or move speed or impose disadvantage on an enemy thanks to Hobgoblin Fey Gift feature, right? And that, to me, just feels a whole lot better. Keep in mind as well that our sneak attack damage goes up to a 2d6 now, and that really helps our somewhat mediocre damage feel significantly better. But at level 4, I think it's time to leave Rogue behind. Now that we've earned the title of Mastermind, it's time to explore the other things that we learned in the Academy. Namely, skills that would let us better direct and inspire our allies in combat. It's time to take some fighter levels. So, as a fighter 1, we get Second Wind, of course, that lets us heal a little bit of hit points as a bonus action once per short rest. This is nice. No leader can be particularly effective or inspiring if they're dead. We also get a fighting style. I'm tempted to take the superior technique fighting style to give us a battlemaster maneuver and a superiority die to spend on it once per short rest, but
spoiler alert,
I'm planning on going battlemaster with this character. Of course, that's probably not much of a spoiler, actually. And while having another maneuver and superiority die would be fantastic, we're sitting at a 14 dexterity and thus aren't hitting our target quite as often as we maybe should be. Thus, I think if it were me, I'd probably take the archery fighting style here to give us a +2 to hit with our ranged weapon, and that will really help make sure that we're landing our sneak attack fueled attack with a lot more regularity. Even though we're not really focused on damage, you're still going to find yourself taking the attack action a lot with this character, and you don't want to just be missing every time, right? Don't forget, when we multiclass into fighter, we do get proficiency in medium armor and in martial weapons now, so I'd probably start wearing some scale mail armor at this point, or better if you can afford it. Maybe just a breastplate if you don't want disadvantage on your stealth checks, right? And using, at this point, probably a heavy crossbow for a little more damage. At level 5, we would be a fighter 2, and we get action surge, of course. An always useful feature, though, since we're not putting out a ton of damage, and sneak attack can only be applied once per turn, even if we get multiple attacks per turn, like we do with action surge, once per short rest, right? Two actions. Getting a second action isn't going to raise our damage by all that much. We will get better uses for it later, though, I think. At level 6, then, we would be a fighter 3, and yes, we get our fighter archetype, our subclass, and we are, of course, going with Battlemaster, like I said. Now, most of you, I would guess, probably expected me to beeline straight for Battlemaster with a purported battlefield commander. And if you wanted to go that route, I wouldn't think it was a bad decision. I'm happy with the route that we took to enhance our hobgoblin helpfulness, among other things. But now, as a Battlemaster, yes, we get 4 superiority dice to spend per short rest. Those dice are D8s, and they fuel a number of really great combat maneuvers, of which we get to learn 3 from an extensive list. The question is, which ones should we take? First of all, we need to keep one thing in mind. If there is a DC for an enemy to avoid the effect of one of these maneuvers, that DC is going to be based on either our strength or our dexterity modifier. Our strength is garbage, and our dex is only okay. So I think I would probably avoid taking those kinds of maneuvers for the way that I built this character, personally. That said, there are plenty of really good ones that have no DC attached to them. I think the clear standout here for this character that we kind of have to take and that I would probably expect to be using most of the time is the Commander's Strike maneuver. This tells us that when we take the attack action, we can forego one of our own attacks, of which we only have one currently, of course, and use a bonus action, so it's pretty expensive, but we can then direct one of our companions to strike instead. This becomes a lot better later when we get extra attack, I think. So for now, I'd probably only use it sparingly, but particularly if you have an ally who tends to hit a whole lot harder than you do, someone with a great weapon master feat or sharpshooter feat especially, right? As for the other options, I'd take 2 of the following, I think. Bait and switch is not bad, letting you spend 5 feet of move speed and swap places with another creature that you're within 5 feet of. Most likely an ally, but possibly an enemy. Afterwards, until your next turn, you or the person you swapped with gets to increase armor class by the number that you roll on your superiority die. That's a fantastic defensive buff. I like commanding presence for thematic purposes, if nothing else. It lets you add your superiority die to an intimidation, persuasion, or a performance check, which is going to be situationally useful for utility, probably. Distracting strike could be good. It lets you do a little extra damage and then grants an ally advantage on an attack against the enemy that you hit. Sort of like taking the help action that we're so often doing. But now we could maybe provide that for 2 different enemies, 2 different allies. Maneuvering attack is great, letting you again add damage to an attack against an enemy and then causing an ally to move half their move speed with their reaction to get into better position without provoking opportunity attacks, right? Flank them on the left!
We'll be right back.
Do you love all things about comic books? The stories, the art, the characters, the creators? Then listen to Comics Discourse 114, where our 3 friends discuss both current and classic comic books from all publishers and the creators behind them.
Rally is a really good one, letting you use a bonus action to give your superiority die plus your charisma modifier in temporary hit points to an ally. And then finally, tactical assessment is worth a look, again, mostly for thematic purposes, but it would let you spend a superiority die and add it to an investigation, history, or insight check. So, at level 6, In lieu of the damage report that I typically do at these levels, let's just maybe pause for a moment to go over all of the many ways that you can currently sway the battle in your party's favor by empowering your allies and demoralizing your enemies. We can help as a bonus action from range anytime we want. 3 times per day, we can add a nice little perk to that, letting an ally move more or get some temporary hit points, or stay a little safer by giving disadvantage to an enemy. Several times per short rest, we will be directing our allies to make an extra attack against an enemy, or potentially doing something else like increasing their armor class, or letting them move into a more advantageous position, or giving them some temporary hit points. Again, altogether, you've got a pretty nice suite of tools to strengthen, encourage, inspire, and outmaneuver. I think it would be a blast to play, but I look at it thus far as a decent foundation. There's a lot more to come. So let's see where we can go from here. But first, at level 7, we need a couple more levels of fighter, I think, just to shore up the foundation that we've built thus far. So yes, as a fighter 4, we would get our first ability score increase or feat. I want to get all of my stats higher than they currently are, but I feel like if we're building a true battlefield commander, we sort of have to take the inspiring leader feat, right? For both flavor and mechanics, it's a pretty great feat. Once per short rest, you can spend 10 minutes giving a really great pre-battle speech like Braveheart or King Theoden, and up to 6 creatures, including yourself, who hear the speech, gain temporary hit points equal to your charisma modifier plus your character level. So 10 temporary hit points currently. That's pretty nice, especially considering that we've got some other ways to give temporary hit points during the fight once those initial ones have run out. You are shoring up a lot of resolve. At level 8, we'd be a fighter 5, and we get extra attack, so we can attack twice when we take the attack action instead of just once. To be honest, my initial plans for this character didn't even get to extra attack ever, focusing instead on other ways to buff our allies and improve their capabilities on the battlefield. But the more I thought about it, the more it made sense getting to extra attack. I assume that we'd be using Commander Strike fairly frequently with this build, and considering that with Commander Strike you have to spend both your attack and your bonus action, it just felt like a little too heavy a price to pay, even if it meant giving an additional, you know, reaction attack to a really hard-hitting ally. But if we have extra attack, then we can still make our sneak attack fueled attack, which is really where most of our damage is coming from on this character, right? And you can only apply sneak attack once per turn. And then give up that second attack to a much harder hitting ally. And it just felt a lot better. So here we are. Your damage is still not great, but it's okay. And when you use your commander's strike, it's probably really, really good depending on who else is in your party, so long as you count your ally's damage as your own. Which, by the way, my friend Corey, I mentioned at the beginning, right, when he would do this on his character, he would actually give you one of his die and say, okay, you get to make a reaction attack, roll that. And I think that kind of helped him a little bit, be like, that was my damage. And it totally was, so it's fair. One quick note, make sure that you switch from a heavy crossbow if you are using one to a longbow here, as we don't have the crossbow expert feat and thus could only ever attack once when we take the attack action using a crossbow due to the loading property, right? At level 9, I think it's time to leave our martial classes behind for a few levels and focus on picking up some additional ways to improve the way that we can augment our allies' battlefield prowess through our guidance and direction. I want to take here a level in cleric, but let me say that I'm not sure, again, that I would necessarily think of this character's clericism as devotion to a particular deity, necessarily. Of course, you could go that route if you wanted to. Maybe you graduated from a military academy that was religious in nature. Notre Dame, Notre Dame meets West Point. But for me, I might think of this as like the part of your training where you pledged yourself to a code or a standard. Because yes, as a cleric 1, we get to choose our subclass, our divine domain, and we're going to go with the order domain. I've done an order cleric in the past, only once I think. It was a full order cleric built for the 2-character team-up build, Battery in the Blender. That was a lot of fun, but I would like to read what Wizards of the Coast has written about order clerics because it feels like it fits our character concept perfectly. The order domain represents discipline, as well as devotion to the laws that govern a society, an institution, or a philosophy. Clerics of order meditate on logic and justice as they serve their gods, or not. Clerics of order believe that well-crafted laws establish legitimate hierarchies, and those selected by law to lead must be obeyed. Those who obey must do so to the best of their ability, and if those who lead fail to protect the law, they must be replaced. In this manner, law weaves a web of obligations that create order and security in a chaotic multiverse. So, yes, one of the first things that was drilled into you at the academy was the importance of following the chain of command, right? Respecting authority. At this point in your character's career, you've probably earned the right to demand that respect from your party members, I hope. As an order cleric, we get some bonus proficiencies, proficiency in heavy armor, so we could now potentially switch to plate mail if it were available. I think I would probably do so with the understanding that you might be suffering a 10 feet move speed penalty because we don't have a high enough strength. As a ranged character, I'm not super worried about that, but anyway, it's only the difference of one AC, right, between plate and half plate with a +2 dexterity modifier. So, as an order cleric, at level 1, we get Voice of Authority, and this is the main reason that we wanted to dip cleric. This ability is one of the best in-game, in my opinion, for making you an amazing battlefield commander. I wish I could have gotten to it sooner, but there were just other things that took priority, and we only have 2 spell slots as a level 1 cleric, and so had we gotten this early, I would have wanted to rework the entire build so that we could get more spell slots early on, which could be done, but anyway. I'm still happy with where we're at. I just wish I could have gotten this sooner. With Voice of Authority, if you target an ally with a spell of first level or higher, that ally can use their reaction to immediately make a weapon attack against a creature of your choice that you can see. Similar to the commander's strike, right? It even works for spells that target multiple allies. In that case, you would just have to choose which ally gets that extra attack. The fact that we get to do this while casting a beneficial spell on someone that we were probably going to be doing anyway, as a support character, is just really pretty amazing, and would make me want to save almost all of my spell slots for ally heals and buffs. So now, again, thanks to both Commander's Strike and this, we have a couple of really nice ways to give our allies extra attacks with their reaction. That's super cool. The armor's weak between the helmet and the pauldron. Strike there! Stuff like that. We also, of course, as a Cleric 1, get spells. And first up, we do get a couple of nice spells for free as an Order Cleric. Command and Heroism. Command is a pretty solid control spell for a first level spell, letting you force a wisdom save, or the target must obey your single word command, right? You tell them to flee, and they have to spend their entire turn running away from you by the fastest means possible. That should keep them out of combat for a couple of rounds in most cases. There are other fun and creative commands to give, of course, though keep in mind that we do only have a 14 wisdom, so our DC for this isn't going to be great. Plus, we kind of want to save those spell slots for buffs and heals on our allies, right? So they can get extra attacks out of it. Heroism requires concentration, so that's a little bit of a bummer, but it makes an ally immune to fear and gives them temporary hit points every single round. That's really nice if you have one party member in particular that you're really trying to keep alive and unafraid. I think the two main ones that I'd want to make sure to grab here would be Bless, first of all, right? And I think that would be our go-to concentration spell, really for most, if not all, of our career. It lets us grant up to 3 party members an extra d4 on all attacks and saving throws so long as you maintain your concentration. And of course, right when you cast it, one of the party members that you bless will get to make an extra attack with their reaction. I'd also be sure to grab Healing Word, which lets you heal an ally from range as a bonus action. It's tough because most people would say that you should save healing for when your ally drops to 0 hit points and goes unconscious. That's generally true, but in our case, if we did that, we'd heal the unconscious party member, they'd regain consciousness, and then immediately get to make an attack with their reaction. But since they were unconscious, they're going to be prone, and so they're going to have disadvantage on the attack. You know, there might be times when you'd be better off just trying to give an ally a few more hit points to hopefully keep them alive one more round, especially if there's an enemy that you're fighting that you're pretty sure would go down if they just took one more hit. Anyway, for our level 9 tactics report, we've added a lot of nice tools to our tactical leader's tool belt. I would for sure try to find time to give an inspiring speech before combat, like basically during any short rest that you take, I think, to give those temporary hit points and get my squad ready for the fight ahead. Once combat started, I'd probably cast Bless on my party on round one every time, so long as I had the spell slot for it, of course, and then taking the help action as a bonus action, right, on that first round. Potentially using Fey Gift to give one of those allies some extra move speed so they can get into a more advantageous position. One of those allies who received your blessing, the bless spell, would get to make an attack with their reaction, so pick the hardest hitting one or the one who is at least in range to actually make that attack otherwise. On subsequent rounds, you could be making one attack and granting additional attacks via Commander Strike or simply continuing to attack and then help your allies from range with your bonus action, heal occasionally if you needed to. There are lots of great options available to you, but it's about to get even better. Because at level 10, now that we have the fantastic Voice of Authority feature, my main priority becomes getting more spells and spell slots to give our allies as many free reaction attacks on their turn as possible. You could, of course, just take more cleric levels to accomplish this, but I think I would prefer to start taking bard levels now. But again, similar to how I don't really think of our rogue as being a traditional rogue or our cleric as being a traditional cleric, we are the battlefield commander class, right? I don't really think of this bard as being a very traditional bard either. They're not so much a musical performer as an orator. And I guess some of you maybe play a bard that way, but most of us probably have a lute. Anyway, you're a master of the spoken word, an inspiring speech giver. You are a character who knows just what to say to keep your allies fighting when they feel ready to give up and retreat, who bolsters their confidence because you make them feel like you believe in them, even when they might not believe in themselves. And so, as a bard, at one we get bardic inspiration, of course. It's hard to imagine building a character who's meant to lead, direct, and inspire without bardic inspiration, right? In fact, my biggest regret with this character is putting off Bard for as long as I did. But with Bardic Inspiration, Charisma modifier times per day, so 3 for now, we can use a bonus action to inspire one of our allies. They get to then add our Inspiration die, which is a d6 currently, to an attack, save, or ability check of their choice within the next 10 minutes. I hope that you keep handy a nice list of encouraging words. Maybe look up some inspirational quotes, or better yet, come up with your own, to call out when you're inspiring your friends. It's always my favorite part of this feature, personally. We do get bard spells, of course, here as well, and because we have a better charisma score than we do wisdom, and that gap is only going to widen as we level up, I would probably make Bless the only cleric spell that I cast regularly. Also, for that reason, you might want to consider grabbing Healing Word as a bard spell here too, even though we already have it, but that way we'd get a little more healing out of it, right? Same with Command, if you plan on using it, so that it would have a better DC. The good news is, the spell we cast doesn't have to be a cleric spell in order to benefit from the Voice of Authority feature. It just has to be a first level spell or higher. The other spells that I would consider here for bard would be Vicious Mockery, my favorite bardic cantrip. It only does 2d4 at this level in damage, 3d4 next level if the enemy fails their saving throw, but then it also imposes disadvantage on their next attack, and frankly, there might be some instances where that would be more valuable than the slightly higher damage you'd be doing with your bow. Plus, Vicious Mockery is potentially hilarious. It's definitely inspiring to see your commander hurling insults at the enemy, right? Showing how unafraid of them they are, yeah? You might want to consider Cure Wounds as well. I know it requires an action instead of a bonus action like Healing Touch, and you have to touch them instead of being able to cast it from range, so typically Healing Word is thought of as a better healing spell. But there are going to be times when your bonus action will be spoken for, maybe by using your Bardic Inspiration, or that you really wanted to take the help action, whatever. So having a healing option with your action is nice, and it does heal for a little bit more than Healing Word. And again, of course, whoever you use this on would get to use their reaction to make a weapon attack. Finally, I think Silvery Barbs is both a strong spell and thematically appropriate, as it lets you both force an enemy to reroll a successful attack, ability check, or saving throw, potentially causing them to fail, right? Thus protecting your allies or making sure that a spell sticks against an enemy, etc. And then you get to grant advantage to one ally that they would use on their next attack, saving throw, or ability check. So it's kind of like another form of inspiration almost. At level 11, we'd be a Bard 2, and we get Jack of All Trades. I love this feature. You get to add half your proficiency proficiency bonus rounded down to any ability check that doesn't already add your proficiency bonus. So at this level, that's an additional +2. I feel like a good battlefield commander should be really well rounded in their abilities and in their knowledge base. The best part, of course, is that you can add this to your initiative role as well, and going early in combat will be pretty important for the leader of the group, I think, getting those buffs going on everyone right at the start. We also get Song of Rest at this level, so during a short rest, if anyone is spending hit dice to recover hit points, they can add an additional 1d6 of healing as you, like, go from person to person, shoring up their resolve and saying things like, "Nice work in that last skirmish, soldier. Keep your chin up." At level 12, we would be a Bard 3, and we get another round of expertise. That's most welcome. If you didn't take expertise in, like, intimidation and persuasion, I definitely would now, personally, but feel free to take whatever you think suits your character best. We also get our Bard subclass, our Bard College, and I think there are actually a lot of potential choices here that would make sense thematically and give some nice mechanical advantages as well, but I think my favorite for this character, actually, is one that might surprise you. We're going with the College of Glamour, and that's two subclasses today that I've never used before in a single build. I love it. Now, we might not think of a glamour bard as a typical battlefield commander, but hear me out on this. Here's what we read about glamour bards. The bards of this college are regarded with a mixture of awe and fear. Their performances are the stuff of legend. These bards are so eloquent that a speech or song that one of them performs can cause captors to release the bard unharmed and can lull a furious dragon into complacency. The same magic that allows them to quell beasts can also bend minds. Villainous bards of this college can leech off a community for weeks, misusing their magic to turn their hosts into thralls. Heroic bards of this college instead use this power to gladden the downtrodden and undermine oppressors. I think we can totally make this work thematically. We don't need to interpret glamour here as particularly showy or visually enchanting even, right? More like, you command so much respect and attention that friends and foes alike can't help but be a little in awe of you when you're issuing orders on the battlefield and shouting praise and encouragement to your allies, directing their actions with precision and efficacy. You are a veteran of the battlefield at this point. Your reputation precedes you. Your enemies fear you, and your party and your comrades have developed a confidence in your leadership abilities that have become the stuff of legend. That is how I interpret glamour for this character. So, we get two nice features as a glamour bard. First up, enthralling performance. This tells us that once per short rest, if we perform for 1 minute, and this doesn't have to be a song, it could be a legendary tale of an ancient and epic battle, I think. Maybe even one of your own party's exploits. At the end of the performance, up to charisma modifier number of creatures who listened to and saw it all have to make a wisdom saving throw or they are charmed by us. They idolize us and will hinder anyone who opposes us, though we are told that they won't resort to violence unless they were already sort of predispositioned to fight for us. This charm lasts for an hour, or until we harm them or their allies. Now, this might not have a ton of combat application, but I would love to see this work in-game, and actually, I would really like to hear your story of when you or someone at your table used this feature to great effect, because I'll bet it was a pretty memorable moment. The arguably more useful feature, though, for us, at least in combat, is Mantle of Inspiration. This tells us that, as a bonus action and with a use of our Bardic Inspiration, we can give ourselves a wondrous appearance. Maybe you're standing on a rock, raising your bow in the air, right as the sunlight breaks through the clouds, right? To shine down on you as you yell, "For Frodo." Or whatever. Anyway, when you do this, charisma modifier number of allies gain 5 temporary hit points, and when they gain these hit points, they can immediately use their reaction to move up to their speed without provoking opportunity attacks. That's kind of awesome, and will be a great tool to both help your allies get into range for attacks or get away from enemies to stay safe. I love it. Vicky, fall back! Sari, move forward! We also get second level spells here. Lots of great options, of course. I love Zone of Truth here, thematically, if nothing else, for like the utility it gives you to let you interrogate a captured enemy who just can't resist your commanding presence and has to spill the beans about their master's plan to you. Plenty of decent control, utility, and even damage spells, but the ones that I would be sure to grab would be Aid. letting you raise your ally's maximum and current hit points by 5, and the spell scales nicely by 5 more hit points for every level that you upcast it. And also, I think Lesser Restoration as part of like your battlefield triage, healing, and curing that you were trained on in the academy. And I will say, you know, I can definitely see a really great use of our action surge at this level and before too, but maybe especially now. I can imagine starting off combat, casting Bless, action surge, casting Aid. This might be the only time I would, on a character, wait to cast Aid until the fight started, right? And now you have both bolstered your allies, but also given 2 of them, potentially, an attack with their reaction, right? That would be a great way to start a fight. At level 13, we'd be a Bard 4, and we finally get another ability score increase or feat. I think we have to bump our charisma here. So much of what we're doing is improved by our charisma, from our spell DC to how much we heal to the number of times we can use Bardic Inspiration and the number of allies that we can affect with Mantle of Inspiration. Capping charisma has to be our number one priority, I think, and I'm just sad that it took us this long to get to even just 18, which is where we're at right now. For our level 13 tactics report, then, in addition to everything else that we've been doing thus far to help our allies strike with greater precision and more frequently and shore up their resolve and outmaneuver our opponents, we have added Bardic Inspiration, Mantle of Inspiration, greater maximum hit points, more and better spells to trigger Voice of Authority. Your allies are going to be moving all over the place, forever outmaneuvering your opponents, getting advantage constantly on their attacks, being bolstered and re-bolstered by waves of temporary hit points, and making reaction attack after reaction attack thanks to your prowess as a commander. The enemy won't know what hit them, and your allies will love you for it. At level 14, we would be a Bard 5. Finally, we get Font of Inspiration. This means that our Bardic Inspirations renew on a short rest instead of a long rest, and that's just going to mean so many more inspiration uses for our allies and Mantle of Inspiration uses for us. Speaking of, don't forget that our Bardic Inspiration die does go up to a D8 now, and that's a small but welcome bump. Finally, at this level, we do gain 3rd level bard spells too, and there are lots of amazing options. Naturally, we're talking 3rd level spells, right? Dispel magic, hypnotic pattern, tiny hut, slow. But the ones that are, I think, both powerful but also thematically on point would be catnap. You calm up to 3 allies, and after just 10 minutes, they get to enjoy the benefits of a short rest. It has a very sort of on your feet, soldier, feel to it, right? Fear would be fun, I think, here, as it lets you throw out a 30-foot cone area of effect, and any creature in the area who fails their saving throw has to drop what they're holding, become frightened, and dash away from you on their turn. This is a very much like, oh no, it's the Blackthorn! Here, no one survives when the Blackthorn takes the field. Run! It does require concentration, of course, and that would conflict with Bless, but it might be situationally superior. Finally, I would say that we should consider motivational speech. It might not be quite as good as the inspirational leader feat, but you cast the spell over 1 minute instead of the 10 minutes that the pep talk from inspirational leader takes, and then for the next hour only, up to 5 creatures who listen to your speech get 5 temporary hit points and advantage on wisdom saving throws. It can be upcast for 5 more temporary hit points per spell level as well, which is nice. Still not as many temporary hit points as inspirational leader gives, but not bad, and advantage on wisdom saves is pretty nice too. What's more, with motivational speech, if they get hit by an attack, they have advantage on the next attack that they make. The big bummer with the spell is that once the temporary hit points you give them are gone, the spell ends for them. But hopefully they'll get to benefit from all that it offers at least once before those temporary hit points expire. Also, you can only benefit from inspirational leader once per short rest. And again, that speech takes longer. So I suppose I might think of like motivational speech here as sort of the halftime pep talk speech rather than the longer pregame pep talk, right? A quick reminder of the things that you went over in that longer pep talk just to kind of, you know, get everybody sort of animated and encouraged and ready for the second half. At level 15, we would be a Bard 6 and we get Mantle of Majesty. This is a pretty fantastic feature. As a bonus action, you can cast the command spell without spending a spell slot, and then for 1 minute or until your concentration ends. So yes, again, concentration conflict, biggest drawback to this feature, I think. But For 1 minute, or until your concentration ends, you can cast Command as a bonus action on each of your turns without spending a spell slot. Creatures charmed by you automatically fail the save against Command. That is... wow. That's amazing. Every turn as a bonus action. No spell slot. Enemies are going to be fleeing or groveling all over the field, convinced that they will never be able to defeat you or your allies. Now, you can only do this once per long rest, and I'm honestly kind of grateful for that, because it conflicts with both using Bless or maybe Fear, and with taking the Help action as a bonus action, using Commander Strike, using Mantle of Inspiration, giving Bardic Inspiration, etc., etc. So we're really doing a lot less to bolster our allies when we use Mantle of Majesty. Of course, you could argue that we're doing a lot more for our allies by removing an enemy from combat every single round by simply using our bonus action. And I love how many resources this will actually help us conserve, since when we're using Mantle of Majesty, we'll probably be commanding every single round with our bonus action, saving our inspirations and our superiority dice for the next combat encounter, at which point we'll have a lot more of them to spend. At level 16, I think I probably want to end this character with fighter levels. You may think that's crazy since we're just about to get 4th level bard spells, among other things, but I think for me, I just don't really want this character to be like a primary caster. In fact, the spells that I have tried to take and that I would plan on casting, I would really try to make thematically appropriate, if you can't tell, and almost flavor them as being like a result of my charismatic leadership and not so much the mystical or arcane, right? I think the command spell and bless and motivational speech and even fear can all be very easily flavored this way, but polymorph? Not so much. It's an amazing spell, right? But just wasn't quite the right fit for my vision of this character, thematically. Of course, go ahead, stick with Bard if you want. Turn your enemies into goldfish, turn your allies into T-Rexes. But as for me, yes, I'm going Fighter 6 here, so that we can get another ability score increase or feat, first of all, and thus cap our charisma at 20, finally. And then at level 17, we'd be a Fighter 7, and getting to Fighter 7 felt important to me on this character because at level 7, we get to learn 2 more Battlemaster maneuvers, we get 1 more superiority die per short rest. Those things in and of themselves are great, but then we also get the Know Your Enemy feature, which is just a really great feature thematically, if nothing else. It might have limited use in game in combat, but with Know Your Enemy, if you spend 1 minute observing or interacting with a creature outside of combat, you can learn if they are your inferior, superior, or equal in 2 characteristics of your choice, including strength, dexterity, constitution, armor class. That's pretty nice to start off knowing an enemy's armor class, or at least having a good idea as to what it might be. Their current hit points, also really nice. Their total class levels, or their fighter class levels. Dang, this is really like one of the best peek behind the curtain abilities that we can get in game, I feel like. One of the only officially sanctioned metagaming is okay abilities that's out there. Now, the 1 minute requirement that it takes for you to be able to benefit from this is going to mean that you probably won't get to use it all that often in a combat situation, right? But hey, see if you can't get your enemies to be doing like a villainous monologue for a while so that you can study them and learn some things about them before the fight starts, right? Or, I mean, heck, you've got rogue abilities, right? You might have expertise in stealth. Sneak up on that ridge, pull out your binoculars, and scope out the battlefield. Check out your enemies before the fight even begins. Learn what you can about them, and then plan the best way to make your attack and which enemies you should be targeting first. When you do get a chance to use this feature in-game, I think it'll feel pretty awesome. For our final tactics report, then, we've capped our charisma, we've gained more uses of inspiration, more uses of our maneuvers, more and better spells, the ability to know the enemy better, and the incredible Mantle of Majesty feature. We are the ultimate battlefield commander. And so, let's discuss final thoughts. You know, gosh, I love this character. I know, I always say that. This is like one of my favorites in recent memory. So flavorful, and I think fun, and really potent, and useful, and powerful. Now, on the one hand, this character might seem like the ultimate selfless character out there, right? And it's easy to think how it might take like the right kind of person to play a character like this in game. They should be someone who was just as interested or maybe even more interested in the success of their friends than they are in their own success or exploits anyway. Someone who takes pleasure in the big hits and awesome plays of their friends and who's a little less worried about their own. On the other hand, even though your character might not feel like they're doing a ton of damage or making a ton of attacks, in reality, almost everything that your entire party is doing, if they're doing it well, is at least in part as a result of your efforts on the battlefield. Failure to recognize that might leave you feeling a little underwhelmed or bored or frustrated with this character, but if you think about it almost like you're playing a war game, or like Baldur's Gate, or Divinity Original Sin, or Dragon Age, or heck, even chess, right? You're not the rook, or the knight, or even the queen. You're the one playing the game. You're playing all of them, moving the pieces, commanding them who to attack, where to strike, how to position themselves as advantageously as possible. The rest of us, we're simply the pawns in your hands. And speaking from someone who has played a pawn in a battlefield commander's hands, I can attest to the fact that it was a blast for both me and them. And I think it will be for you and your friends as well. So that's the build for the week. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you know that I love you. I really do. You're amazing. Thank you for watching and for liking and subscribing and considering joining the channel as a member and all of those things. Please check out the other content on the channel if you're not typically in the habit of doing so. But I hope you have a fantastic day and a really great week. And I hope that you stay safe and that you're kind and good. And that I see you again really soon. But until then, take care. Bye-bye. You say, love is a temple, love the higher law. Love is a temple, love the higher law. Doopy doopy doop. Nice work in that last skirmish, Shoal. Nice work in that last skirmish, Shoal. You ask me to enter, then you make me crawl, and I can't be holding on to what you got when all you got is hurt. Oh, such a good song. Come on, baby. That looks pretty good. All right. Pits aren't so sweaty today. That's an improvement. Well, no, don't even say that. Don't even talk about any of that. I need to say this differently. Stop saying that. I've said it too much. Don't say it.